Here is the latest news. The Germans are driving close to the Channel ports. The German High Command said today that Arras, Amiens, and Abbeville at the mouth of the Somme River have been taken by Nazi forces. The German High Command added that the 9th French Army, which was on the Meuse between Namur and Sedan, has been crushed and is about to be dissolved. The German communique added, "The Army Staff and General Giraud, hitherto commander of the 7th French Army, who assumed command over the 9th Army, have been captured. And according to the German communique, the Nazi forces are crowding the French and British armies north of the Somme and pushing them toward the Channel." To this German High Command statement, the German official news agency added its report this afternoon that British troops, which were sent to Belgium at the start of the German drive into the Low Countries, are attempting to reach England and are under attack by the German Air Force. The German news agency claimed that the Allied forces are completely surrounded in Belgium and in northern France. The German news agency said that the capture of Abbeville was carried out by strong forces over a wide front. In Paris, Premier Paul Reynaud made a starkly direct speech to the French Senate. He said that German forces have occupied Amiens and Arras and had also taken Laon. Reynaud said that unbelievable faults were committed by French officers. He promised punishment for those responsible. He used the word disaster in describing the German breakthrough at the Meuse. He added that the Germans had gotten across into France because a bridge was not destroyed despite the order for its destruction. "The fatherland is endangered," said Reynaud. "It is my duty to tell the truth." The premier said the French strategy had been based upon a misconception. He said France must think of new methods of war, and he declared that the Allies are going to win, even if a miracle should be needed to save them. Reynaud said that the Germans took the fort of Eben-Emael at Liège because parachutists got control of the telephone lines and gave false orders. This, if confirmed, might explain how the Germans took that strong point so easily, despite all the stories of all manner and variety of reputedly secret weapons which they circulated after that fort fell. Reynaud declared that he and General Weygand and General Pétain, now Vice Premier, are agreed on the new war plan. He said he must tell the truth because that is the way to begin the drive for reorganization. He said the two great peoples of France and Britain cannot be beaten. They will conquer, he said. Reynaud added, "In starting our effort for a public salvation, we will not stand for any weakening. The death penalty is too meager for traitors. Let us rise to the same height as the misfortune of the country." Reynaud declared that this surprise, as he put it, is not the first the French have overcome in the course of their history. He called for a tremendous effort by everyone in France. An air raid alarm sounded in Paris. Anti-aircraft guns went into action, but the all-clear signal was given some 35 minutes later, and there were no reports of any bombings. Washington got a cablegram from Wayne Chatfield Taylor, in charge of American Red Cross operations in Europe, saying that food resources will be immediately exhausted because of the inroads made on the supplies by 5 million French and Belgian refugees. The cable said, "Impossible to exaggerate refugee problem. 5 million already. Impact on all food supplies is staggering. Resources here be immediately exhausted." Another dispatch from Paris reported a shortage of milk. Tonight, German planes were sighted off the southeast coast of England. Anti-aircraft batteries went into action against them. The British government geared up its efforts to fight off any landing by German parachutists or activities by Fifth Column elements. War Secretary Anthony Eden told the House of Commons that organization of volunteer troops to defend vulnerable points was proceeding with great rapidity. Prime Minister Churchill said that legislation would be enacted tomorrow providing the death penalty for any parachutists caught wearing civilian clothes. Correspondents with the British Expeditionary Force in Belgium were brought back to England, and Robert G. Nixon, the International News Service correspondent, said in a dispatch from England just received that about 300,000 British troops are cut off in northern Belgium. Nixon cabled, "British forces numbering approximately 300,000 men, together with mixed French and Belgian regiments, can now be considered cut off in northern Belgium in a great sector extending from the port of Antwerp in a semicircle southward to Abbeville and Boulogne." This International News Service dispatch, filed from London, continued, "German flying columns, backed by a tremendous and persistent bombardment and the use of fast mechanized forces, have driven a wedge, cutting off the two major Allied forces with the British to the north and the French to the south." Nixon added, "The situation at the moment is utterly confused. I have just crossed the channel from a continental port in the center of this northern sector where British forces have been engaged in the most desperate fighting for days past. And while the British forces have been putting up a hand-to-hand battle constantly, they have been pressed to the utmost under German mechanized forces." In Washington, The Senate opened debate today on a peacetime record army appropriation bill. Reports of the German successes were brought to the Senate's attention by Senator Claude Pepper, Democrat of Florida, who introduced a resolution empowering the president to sell the Army and Navy Air Force to the Allies. Time is of the essence, Pepper told the Senate. We must stem the tide of barbarism and dictatorship, which at this moment seems about to engulf the world. Pepper's resolution, introduced immediately after the huge army measure was laid before the Senate by Vice President John N. Garner, was sent to the Foreign Relations Committee. The Senate quickly set itself to the task of rushing the enormous army appropriations to passage. A clerk read committee amendments so rapidly it was almost impossible to follow him. Pepper specifically alluded countries subject to unprovoked invasion. Before crowded galleries, Pepper urged quick consideration of his resolution. He said that news carried on the front pages of this afternoon's newspapers indicated this may be the turning point in the history of our civilization. Acting Secretary of the Navy Lewis Compton today ordered 8 Navy yards on a 2-shift basis as soon as possible and directed hiring of at least 15,000 civilians within the next 3 months. Bulletin, London. King George tonight received Prime Minister Winston Churchill and General Sir Edmund Ironside, British Overseas Commander, at Buckingham Palace. Compton wrote the commandants of the Portsmouth, New Haven, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Norfolk, Charleston, South Carolina, Mare Island, California, and Puget Sound, Washington Navy Yards that steps must be taken at once to expedite the naval shipbuilding program and all other work relating to national defense. All addresses having such work are directed to increase their working force to a 2-shift basis as rapidly as possible, Compton wrote. All practicable steps shall be taken to eliminate the bottlenecks where 3 shifts are now being worked. The shipbuilding yards should be able to increase their civilian forces by at least 15,000 within 3 months. That's the news up to the present moment. Here now is Major George Fielding Elliott with an analysis of the military situation. Major Elliott.
Mechanized advance elements of the German army have reached the key railway center of Amiens, controlling all rail communication between Paris and the Channel ports, and have pushed forward light forces to Abbeville, near the mouth of the Somme River on the English Channel. Other German mechanized units have reached Arras on the direct road from Cambrai to Calais, north of the heights on the right bank of the Somme. This achievement, if it can be followed up in sufficient force to hold the points named and consolidate the area between them, cuts off from the main French armies the forces in Belgium and the French Channel region. These consist of, first, the British Expeditionary Force, probably 12 to 15 divisions and 1 or 2 armored divisions. Second, the Belgian Army, probably 8 to 10 intact divisions and 1 or 2 light divisions. 3, the 7th French Army, probably 6 to 8 divisions, perhaps somewhat stronger. The total of the force whose communications are thus imperiled is probably in the neighborhood of 600,000 to 700,000 men. The loss of all these would be a terrible blow to the Allied cause. It is necessary to point out that they are not yet lost. So far, the Germans have only pushed out mechanized forces to the points named. They have not yet, as far as can be ascertained, followed these up with strong infantry and artillery forces necessary to consolidate and hold the exposed positions. They have driven a great salient forward into the Allied lines, a salient which is menaced from the north by the troops named, who, after all, are not to be overwhelmed without a struggle, and from the south by the whole remaining force of the French. Thus, while the situation is admittedly blacker for the Allies than at any previous time, either in this war or the last, it is not yet hopeless. Indeed, no situation is hopeless while the Allied armies remain generally intact, retaining their fighting power, and while their operations are directed by such a man as General Weygand, who has been given the fullest powers. But having said so much, we must admit that there is no present sign of any coming reversal of the Allied defeat. The advanced German elements have thrust forward through an area in which there appears to be unbelievable confusion, where units of both sides are fighting without communications in a general melee out of which anything may come. In such a struggle, the Germans have a tremendous advantage in their superior air force, which can keep their high command informed of the course of the fighting and can intervene with crushing effect where most needed. The Allies must suffer in every phase and at every step of their fight because of this German air superiority, though it is clear that the Allied Air Force, inferior though it is doing the best it can. In general, it seems that the Allies in the north are now fighting somewhere in the Mons, Valenciennes, Maubeuge area, perhaps trying to break through to the south or southeast, though this is not clearly known. In the south, there are reports of a French concentration at or near Rennes, perhaps intending to strike northwestward toward Laon and La Fère. If you will look at any good map of the region, you will see that such drives, if completed, would meet in the area Cambrai-Saint-Quentin. Long before they met, however, the Germans to the westward would be feeling the pinch of severed communications. We must emphasize that this is all in the realm of conjecture at present. It is presented not as a prediction of what is going to happen, but as what may remotely be possible if the energetic Weygand can accomplish the miracles which seem to be expected of him. But we must not forget, as far as the Northern force is concerned, the German army in Belgium, which does not seem to have as high a degree of mechanization as their other forces, but is applying continuous pressure on the Allied rear and flank and pouring men in through the Belgian communications, which the fall of Brussels opened up, in a fierce endeavor to overcome the Allied forces. In this connection, I want to read you a United Press dispatch by R.D. McMillan, the United Press correspondent with the British Expeditionary Force, which says in part, quote, Allied troops engaged in terrific street fighting with the Germans tonight in a town famous from World War days. In the light of a bright moon, the British and French smashed against the salient which the Germans had driven into their lines. Troops fought from fortified houses, bridgeheads, and strategic crossroads in the ruins of a town which had been bombed and shelled and machine-gunned by the invaders. Fires started by German incendiary bombs burned at many points, lighting up the streets. The brilliant moonlight made it possible for the opposing armies to fight right through for 24 hours. Some heavy tanks reinforcements were thrown into the struggle, and the Allies brought up some larger types of anti-tank guns in an effort to block passage of the enemy's new mechanized units. One Tommy back from the front line told me, it's the fiercest battle the British Army has experienced since the big German attack began. The struggle at Louvain was tame in comparison. The spirit of our men is grand. They know the situation is pretty serious and are impressed with the fact that, at this point, their fathers and brothers made history by holding the enemy. Now they are putting up a magnificent repeat performance. End of quote of the United Press dispatch. This town is probably Mons, famous in the history of the British Expeditionary Force of 1914. This dispatch, of course, deals with past fighting. It was filed originally under a Monday dateline, and the correspondents with the BEF are now being brought back to England. Premier Reynaud's speech supports the German account of the breakdown of the French 9th Army on the Meuse, which apparently is broken as General Gough's British 5th Army broke in 1918. The 9th Army was largely composed of reserve divisions. It is to be remembered that under the military law of 1927, the French Army is reduced from 32 to 20 first-line divisions. The mass of the French forces naturally will now be reserves, and such a decision condemned the French from the very first to a defensive policy. The other first-line troops which would be available were the garrisons, of course, of the Maginot Line fortresses. It is to be remembered also that in such a case, an army such as the Germans, prepared with 54 first-line divisions and 36 reserve divisions, hardly to be differentiated from them, had a tremendous advantage from the beginning, to which must be added the German superiority in the air and in mechanized troops. The dispatch just come in from London. Lord Beaverbrook, Minister for Aircraft Production, tonight stepped up airplane manufacture in Britain to a 24-hour day and a 7-day week. This is ominous of the future which faces Britain now that the Channel ports and Belgium are in German hands, and the possibility that the Germans may establish themselves just across the English Channel from the English coast. Certainly, if the situation can be stabilized as far as the French are concerned along the Somme and the Aisne, the very next German move will be an air attack on Great Britain. And in this connection, it is interesting to note that Sir Edmund Ironside accompanied the Prime Minister to an interview with King George at Buckingham Palace, which may indicate that this strong man is being placed in charge of all British defenses as Weygand in France.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.